702 Karima's on Twitter at Karima Brown.
It is 21 minutes to what? After 9 o'clock. This is the Karima Brown Show. You are listening to 702. Now, interviews for the new National Director of Public Prosecutions began very early this morning at the Union Buildings. NGO Right to Know earlier this week approached the North Gauteng High Court in Pretoria to have the interviews open to the media and the public. We spoke with them last night, and Judge J.W. Lowe ruled in their favour and said the office of the NDPP is required to be independent and should be seen to be independent. And yesterday we heard, of course, from the Democratic Alliance's MP, Advocate Glynis Breytenbach, that she was no longer in the running, saying she wants the position to be depoliticized. Well, to take a closer look at the actual candidates and what they bring to the party, I am joined on the line by the executive director at the Institute for Security Studies, who also happened to be an advocate and a former prosecutor, Mr. Anton du Plessis. Mr. du Plessis, good evening and a warm welcome to the Karima Brown Show.
Good evening, Karima.
Now, there has been some criticism over the fact that the list that we have, even though it was sifted, contains individuals that are simply unsavory. One of them was, of course, Advocate Moiponi Noko, who is the head of the NPA in KwaZulu-Natal. And the other was, in fact, Mr. Silas Ramaiti himself, who, of course, was the subject of a story in the City Press this weekend, and also had a drunken charge against him, and the case miraculously disappeared. Before we get into the merits of the other individuals, is this the correct list? Is this the best list that they could have come up with?
Well, we don't really know too much about the process. I think we must be realistic that President Ramaphosa didn't have too much time on his hand. The Constitutional Court only gave him 90 days to make this appointment, and this is quite a novel approach. So I think he's gone as far as he could have gone under the circumstances. I hope this sets a precedent that moving forward there'll be more transparency, more engagement, and in fact even a look at even further amendments to the NPA Act, because I think what South Africans know, and I think all of us know, that this is potentially the most important decision or appointment that President Ramaphosa is going to make, and that in many ways the future of our country depends on it. And I think we can maybe discuss that a bit further as to why this is actually such an important appointment, and why therefore it's so important that the public is able to have as much insight into as possible.
Absolutely. And of course, Glynis Breytenbach last night, when she told me that she's withdrawn, she raised the bar. I mean, she is a qualified prosecutor. Nobody doubts that. She has 25 years of experience. But she recognized that she's a DA politician. And she said that in the interest of not damaging and tainting the institution and its rebuild, she believes that she needs to withdraw. And of course, that means that whoever is chosen has to meet that criteria. This cannot be someone who can be seen to be politically manipulated or told what to do. We have never seen an NDPP head serve out his or her term. And as you correctly say, this is the most important appointment of the Ramaphosa presidency so far. Do you think that the committee is reading Ms. Breytenbach's withdrawal in that light and will apply themselves in that way?
I'm not sure. I hope so. I think some of the points she made about the political independence of the NDPP are really important. And I think the question that she raised is also about perceptions, because I know some candidates today spoke about following the facts and not really being worried about perceptions. But considering that the rule of law is a fundamental component of the social contract that we have in this country, and that Ramaphosa or South Africa's new dawn, we simply won't move forward on until we fix the social contract, perceptions around this appointment matter a big deal. And of course, any perception of a candidate that's politically aligned is going to be negative for the institution. And I think the Constitution makes it clear. The prosecution head should be able to act without fear or favour. And that means that there should be no political alignment. But I do think it's important to unpack this notion of, well, three notions really that are vitally important to this discussion. The one is independence.
Yeah.
The other is accountability.
Mm.
And the third one is effectiveness. And that's really where I think the candidates today did not do a very good job on spelling out each of those fundamental components of this job and how they interplay with each other. So maybe we just start with independence, because it's a hugely complex thing. I don't think anyone can deny that the prosecution of high-profile people in any country or in any context is a hugely political, it's a hugely political arena. But I think we sometimes get confused between prosecutors that have to be really smart at being able to navigate the politics of the terrain that they find themselves in, as opposed to being swayed by the politics.
Yes. Now, I think Judge Krichler made that point very, very well. He said that you cannot appoint someone that doesn't have political nous. They do have to, because they have to navigate those waters. That's the context in which they work.
Exactly. But having political nous is very different to being subject or open to political influence. And I think if you look at the first national director, Bulelani Nupa, for all the issues or everything that could be said about him, one of the first things he did was when he became national director, he resigned. He was a senior member of the ANC, and he resigned publicly from the ANC. And I think that is an important principle, and I think Glenys Breytenbach has raised it. But it really is, the public needs to understand that we need a national director that can navigate these politics, but also be able to engage with the politics without fear or favor in a very smart way. Because it's not just the national director's job, not just going after cases and prosecuting cases.
Yes.
It's also being the leader and the manager of a massive organization that operates within a huge state bureaucracy. And let me give you one example. One of the big issues that the national director has to be able to do is work with other sectors of the criminal justice system to get the police and prisons and others to support a broader criminal justice response. That requires proper political maneuvering and the ability to engage at a senior level.
Yeah.
Think about the question of budgets. The national director has to defend and argue for the National Prosecuting Authority's budget every single year. I mean, I was a prosecutor in 97 when Bulelani Nuka took over, and I remember one of the first successes he got was being able to raise the salaries of prosecutors, and he did that by drawing on political connections and some of his politically astute moves that he made at the beginning. And that's very important to understand. It's not just about prosecuting and going after senior people without fear or favor, but it's also being able to run an organization that ultimately finds itself in a hugely political climate in a country where you need to be able to move around that system.
Absolutely. And of course, it doesn't work in isolation. It's part of a greater value chain. And as you say, the interrelationships between these agencies is often also the responsibility of whoever heads up this institution. Let's look at the candidates now, Advocate Pretorius. The people that were interviewed today, you said that they didn't score well on issues of accountability and efficiency. Let's go through some of them. What were you think were the major kind of weaknesses that we saw today?
I think, look, it was a very mixed bag, and I think it's a bit difficult or perhaps even unfair to judge them before we've heard from all the other candidates. So I will sort of reserve my comments on the specifics, but I think on generally speaking, I know many of the candidates, and I thought some of them did reasonably well. But I think there were, if I can just maybe raise three issues that I thought were quite disappointing, and that I hope the panel can focus on. This question of independence and how that interrelates with accountability, for me, wasn't clearly described by any of the candidates, and it's such a fundamental aspect.
Yes.
And the question of accountability is vitally important for the national director. And accountability in South Africa of the NDPP is potentially a really new area that we need to discuss, because the NPA is a bit of an anomaly in South Africa's criminal justice system.
Yes, absolutely.
If you look at the police, the prisons, and the judiciary, they all have statutory or constitutionally mandated oversight bodies. The police have IPED and the Civilian Secretariat. The prisons have the Judicial Inspectorate. And the judiciary has the JSC. So the NPA is a bit of an anomaly there, and we need to look at that, because it's not only, you can't just say, well, the oversight and the accountability comes from the judicial process and the courts, because there's a big component that we know that needs accountability and oversight. And that's not the decision to prosecute, but it's the decision not to prosecute.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as gatekeepers of the criminal justice system, they have immense power. So we do need to have a discussion around how to promote accountability. And I don't think that candidates dealt with that very effectively.
In fact, some people argue that there is a design fault here. And we know that, for example, one of the reasons why there was this anger at the scorpions in the governing party was that they were seen to be a law unto themselves. They were the result of a lot of turf wars, but also just there was this conflict in law about a prosecutorially led investigation and a prosecutorially guided investigation. When we look at state capture, for example, the Hawks will tell you we are at an advanced stage of the investigation, and the NPA will say to you, we don't have enough to actually get a docket. We don't have enough to actually, charge somebody. And how much of that is as a consequence of a lack of proper leadership or the way in which the system is actually designed?
I think it's both, and I think the candidate should have addressed those issues. The design faults need to be looked at. We mustn't forget, the NPA was created at a particular time in a young democracy, and it's a young institution. It's only 20 years old, and it needs to self-correct, and we need to be reflecting. But I was really looking to the candidates to bring some of these international best practices and maybe reflect on some of the mistakes that have been made in the past and how to move forward. And then that links me to the next disappointing element for me. I didn't see any innovation in their responses because right now, this is not about coming in and tweaking an organization that's trundling along nicely. This is about coming and fixing an organization that has huge potential, but that is almost completely destroyed.
Yeah, that needs to be overhauled.
It needs a complete overhaul. It requires innovation, it requires inspiration, it requires leadership, and it requires incredible management skills. And I just didn't get the sense that any of the applicants actually convinced me of that. You know, innovation, for example, no one that I heard of, and I didn't listen to every minute of the interviews, but I didn't hear too much talk around the very issue you raised around the design problem with the scorpions. How are you going to deal with independent directorates, which are under the NPA Act? You can create them, and I think the new national director should be creating them until such time as we can build confidence in police, in crime intelligence. No one mentioned the problem with capacity in the broader criminal justice system. It's one thing saying, I'm going to come in and fix the NPA. But how are you going to work with your counterparts in the Hawks in crime intelligence where we know there are massive problems there? And there are innovative ways around that, but I didn't hear too much about that. The second issue that I was a little bit disappointed about was that none of the candidates, from what I heard, spoke about the other roles or other mechanisms of accountability that ultimately saved us from going over the edge of the cliff. Now, it wasn't the government or the NPA that self-corrected. It was really brave journalism, it was strategic litigation, it was a brave public protector, a Chapter 9 institution, it was whistleblowers who were brave enough to speak out. But it wasn't that these people opened the government's eyes to it. They used their collective efforts as a whole of society accountability approach to force the government's hand. We know that that has to continue. There's not going to be one panacea to the NPA's problem.
Absolutely.
With the national director.
Especially if one looks also at the specific provincial problems. I mean, if you take KwaZulu-Natal, for example, Advocate Norco's track record is just, it sucks. I mean, there's no other way to put it. and one needs to be brutal and frank about it. And of course, this is a poison chalice in many ways because there's so much expectation. The organization is broken, both professionally and ethically. Its methods of working is perhaps a bit outdated. Let's look at some of the candidates. If you take someone like Advocate Andrew Chauke, he is currently Johannesburg's chief prosecutor. He's seen as a strong contender despite being named in a recording by Bosasa CEO Gavin Watson as the right person to go to the National Prosecuting Authority. Now, of course, Bosasa is involved in their own scandals. It's uncool for Mr. Chauke to come up in Mr. Watson's conversation, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, until we know exactly what happened and we know exactly the context of that conversation, perhaps he should be given a chance to explain himself on it, and then I don't want to make a judgment call on it, except to say that the question of perceptions matters. And these candidates, whether or not these accusations are true, or whether or not Silas Ramiti's alleged sex tape did happen. The fact is, perceptions matter, and the yes. candidates should be able to address that and say, how am I going to be the face of the rule of law in this country that is completely decimated, that there is no public confidence left? How am I going to do that when I've got these perception problems? And they should be able to speak about that. They should be able to say, this is my vision to overcome these perception problems. Mm. This is what I'm practically going to do to overcome these perception problems. I didn't get a sense of that. I got a sense that these things are sideline issues. They're not major issues, and ultimately perceptions don't matter that much. I think right now they matter a huge deal, and I think they should have dealt with them head on.
Mm-hmm. Advocate Shamila Batoy is seen as she's the DPP in KwaZulu-Natal. She's known for leading the prosecution against the famous late Hansi Kroonier, the cricket captain at one point in South Africa back in 2000. She later also worked at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. How do you rate her?
Very highly. She's been out of the country for almost 10 years now, so she's no longer the DPP. She was the DPP 10 years ago. Obviously, there was a very important case that happened under her watch, which was initially the Shabir Sheikh trial. So, other than the Hansi Kroonier case, she's got a really solid track record. I think the one thing, or well, the two things that I think are important with Shamila, and I think her interview is only on Friday, the one is that she is regarded within the NPA as being someone who's truly committed to the rule of law, and someone who's truly committed and not at all fearful of taking, and it takes her independence very, very seriously. And we've seen that in a number of cases. I think the Hansi Kroonier prosecution was a long time ago, but anyone who watched it at that time, it was a big deal. And she was a young, unknown prosecutor from KwaZulu-Natal that was thrust onto national television, taking on a national hero. And I think she demonstrated there that she wasn't particularly scared of anyone or anything. And I think that's basically how she's wired, and I've known her for some time, and I think that's how she continues to be. I think that's important. The second part that's important is she's been out of the country for 9 years, which means that while she understands the dynamics of all of these, the complexities of the NPA and the challenges it faces,
is the healthy distance.
Being out of the country. She's got a proper distance. There's no, she's not tainted in any way. And then I think there's something which is perhaps not spoken about enough in her context, and that's that she's been a senior advisor to the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. Now, you can say what you want about the politics of the court, but there's one thing that the ICC does do, and that it goes after, and its whole mandate is to prosecute the most powerful people in the world.
Yes.
So she's spent the last 9 years navigating the politics of prosecuting the most powerful people at a global level. I'm sure those are going to be extremely useful lessons and experience for her when she comes to do that at a domestic level. So, I think she's a strong candidate.
All right, let's look at Advocate Piwe Mlotshwa. He's a former acting prosecution's head in KwaZulu-Natal who made headlines 6 years ago when he refused to drop charges against ANC members. He was removed from his position of DPP as a result and went into private practice in Pietermaritzburg.
Yeah, also, I think not too much known about him. I know he was Shamila's deputy at the time. And for those in the prosecution service, I think he's quite well regarded, and he's got a lot of respect for the decisions he took, particularly, as you said, the decision to proceed with the prosecution of the MEC. At the time on corruption charges, which were, it was a very, very difficult political decision to make. So I think he demonstrated then that he was independent. And I think the fact that he was removed and, continued to succeed in his career after everything he'd gone through, I think puts him in a good position. I'm not so sure about his management experience. And again, I come back to the point that this is, this job requires essentially managing 5,000 people in a very complex environment and appointing, up to 4 deputy national directors. That might be the one area where you need some support, but it's difficult to judge because I don't know how many people he managed when he was deputy DPP in Natal.
What about Advocate Matotsi Mkari? She came across quite strong this afternoon. She was quite charming. There were a couple of questions that she kind of, fudged. But how do you rate her?
I don't know enough about her to make.
She doesn't have any court case experience. That was the one thing that counted against her.
I was quite surprised by her inclusion. I thought, as you say, she's quite charismatic, and I thought some of her answers were quite interesting. But again, coming back to the complexity of this job, I would rate this probably second to the president as one of the most complex, let alone important jobs in the country. And I just can't see from her CV and her answers that she has that, regardless of her own views of her leadership experience and abilities. I just think, knowing what this job entails, that I think it would be a bit of a challenge for her, and that, again, I think it would also be difficult for her, with her experience or relative lack thereof, to come in to lead an organization with, you know, people with many, many years of experience that are looking not only for not only for inspiration, but for very clear guidance in a very complicated situation.
Absolutely. Now, we've also got Advocate Naomi Manaka, former magistrate turned advocate, currently at Maisel's Chamber in Sandton. Manaka gained first-hand experience about the NPA during the time that she was well known for the Benedict Vilakazi rape case. We deal a lot with gender-based violence. These things do matter. To be honest, I don't know all of these candidates, but I would think that a woman would probably do a better job. But I mean, that's because I think we have a different approach and we bring different strengths to positions. But what is your view of Advocate Manaka?
Well, firstly, let me agree with you. I think the appointment of a woman national director, whoever that may be, I think would be really important. I think it's important. It's a very important signal in terms of transformation of the legal system in the country, and I think it's a very important. It would be, and President Ramaphosa has already mentioned this.
Yes.
I also think that, considering the nature of the job and what's required, and an organisation that's got many bruised egos in right now, and is filled with many big egos, I think bringing in a very strong woman that perhaps doesn't have her own ego might be a very helpful thing to do at this time. I think on those grounds, I think Advocate Manaka is potentially a strong candidate. Again, I don't think she has the experience and background in prosecutorial policy that she needs. I don't think she necessarily has the management experience. In fact, I can see she doesn't have the management experience. Anyone who's ever managed an organization, let alone a really big one, you can't just do this on the fly.
No, of course not.
So, of course, there are many people she could appoint to help her manage it. But considering the fact that my feeling is you wouldn't want to have some of the senior managers that are there now when the new NDPP starts. You need to start with a new team, and there you're going to need management experience. You're going to need to know how to build a team. You're going to need to know how to build a team within the confines of the politics that the NPA finds itself in. And I wonder whether or not she has that experience.
A final question. The inclusion of Mwiponi Noko and Silas Ramaite shows you that those people still have pull, still have power, and the politicians who make decisions still take the expectations seriously. As far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't be on this panel.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, for Silas, there are a number of reasons. I mean, the one just being his age, I think. The other being that he's been there for 20 years, and we know where the organization is now, and he's been there as the deputy national director and two stints as acting national director. So for me, I agree. But you know how it is in any employment process. Often people that are there need to be considered, and I think
from a process point of view.
From a process point of view, and also to give him the benefit of the doubt, I mean, he's got a lot of experience, and perhaps I think it may have seemed strange actually to exclude him, considering he is the acting national director. If you take away all of the sort of unknowns around some of the uncertainties in these cases, Advocate Noko, I think, is perhaps a different situation, and I think the political dynamics around including her probably are more relevant to the point you were making about the influence of certain political actors in this process. And maybe it was a way to sort of get people from both camps, if you like, into the shortlist and give them a shot at telling their stories to the public. And in that way, I think the fact that it became a public process was very constructive, because I think If it hadn't been a public process and people had seen the names and they weren't able to actually watch these people explain their vision and explain their situations, whether it's Chalky or Ramite or Noko, I think it would have created a lot of suspicion around the process, and it may have undermined the very objective that President Ramaphosa wanted in the first place.
Absolutely.
He wanted to bring some transparency in an imperfect way because he had very little time. But I think now that he's done it this way, I think he should commit to continuing to open up transparency around the NK, not only around the appointment process, but moving forward, we really need to look at international best practice around setting up independent prosecution in investigation inspectorates. And there are many examples all over the world that can help build the independence, accountability, and credibility of the NPA. And we really need to start looking at those models soon. And the last point to make, and I touched on already, the new national director has to recognize, in my view, the importance of constructive engagement with civil society, the media, strategic organizations like Freedom Under Law, Helen Suzman Foundation, others that have really helped bring us back from the edge of the cliff. And that level of accountability needs to continue. The president should encourage it. The national director should encourage it. And she should create a dialogue forum, or he should create a dialogue forum, in my view, wherever it is, where they are able to engage with civil society on a regular basis and keep that accountability pressure mechanism going, because it's certainly not going to come from the government. And I don't think in any short space of time would it come from any new constitutional amendments. So civil society and the media will have to play that role moving forward.
All right, that's where we leave it. Thank you so very much to the Executive Director of the Institute for Security Studies, Mr. Anton du Plessis. And of course, he was also a former prosecutor.